So am I still waiting, waiting a long time,
waiting for tonight. Oh.
Listen to review, man.
First of all, I was given this to read by one of our agents. And I'm not a puppet. If I was a puppet, I'd be in the other federation, so I won't read this. That's what I gotta say. First of all, I'd like to thank all you guys for coming out. You guys have been supporting us, and we really appreciate it. And I'm telling you, from somebody who's been injured quite a few times, you guys support me a whole lot. And I'm quite sure Shawn Michaels needs your support right now. I'm telling you. If it wasn't for the support you gave me, I wouldn't have been back. But you guys maybe come back and help me come back. But right now, we're here to give the award for the New Sensation of the Year, an award that I won last year that I cherish very, very much. And the nominees are...
Welcome everybody to Review Away. It's John Pollock, and guess who's joining me today? If you guessed Wei Ting, you are correct and win the Slammy Award for the most obvious assumption on a podcast. How are you doing, Wei?
I'm good. I've had a huge filling of the Slammies this week.
We watched 5 hours of Slammy content, 4.5 hours of Slammy Awards this week.
We got the modern day Slammies, and then we went back 13 years in time to re-witness the 1997 Slammy Awards.
What did you think of the modern day Slammy Awards this past Monday night?
I thought they were a little excessive.
We didn't even dawn on me that we spent 45 minutes answering that question on Review of Raw.
A lot has happened since then. A lot of things have changed in the world.
I am so tired right now.
Yeah.
I know it's Sunday night, Monday morning for some of you, but on Thursday morning, you and I went to Milton, Ontario to do a shoot with Tiger Jeet Singh, mm-hmm. Tiger Ali Singh,
yes.
And one of their friends, Troy Newton, who's involved in Troy's Toy Drive, which is going on Monday morning, 6 a.m., and then they're delivering these presents to these kids at Sick Kids Hospital and the Salvation Army on Tuesday. So we were doing that shoot, and it was a lot of fun. We got to go for lunch with them. Mm-hmm. A lot of good times chatting about Tiger Jeet Singh working in Japan and Australia. He's going to send you some pictures of when he wrestled in Hong Kong.
Yeah, I got into a bit of a chat about Tiger Jeet Singh about what it was like to wrestle in Hong Kong. And he's going to find some newspaper articles of the time when he slapped a reporter in Hong Kong, and he made the headlines.
So we did that on Thursday, and then we had to travel back to the Fight Network.
Yeah.
And Milton is like a, I would say, half-hour drive tops to,
yes,
from downtown Toronto to Milton. It took us like an hour and a half to get back. The 401 was just not moving. There were no car accidents. It was just not moving.
Mm.
I am so tired.
That's the worst.
Even 4 days later.
I was lucky because I sat in the car and I got to actually sleep a little bit. But you, all you had to keep you awake was Bill.
We listened. Thank God we had I had my iPod because we passed the time, 90 minutes worth of listening to Dave Meltzer and Brian Alvarez chat with Bill after.
The wrestling nerds that we are.
Hey, that's what we do.
Even in our spare time.
That's how we roll, everybody. So we can only hope that someone out there right now is caught in traffic listening to us.
Oh, yeah.
Who knows? Well, everyone, sit back, because we're going to give you an entertaining next hour here as we review the 97 Slammy Awards. And wait, why 97? Why did you choose the 97 Slammy Awards? Any particular reason? Like, there had been ones in the 80s.
Yes.
Others in the 90s.
This was the fourth of many Slammy Awards, and the reason I chose this over all the others was because 1997 was a very eventful year for myself.
Oh, yeah.
It was the year when Hong Kong...
Sorry, I thought you were going to say a big year for the industry. Of that.
What?
You're talking about yourself.
No,
yeah.
I meant personal.
Hong Kong, they ceased being under control by British Empire.
Yeah, but that's not why I chose it. I just chose it because it was one of the longer ones. And I thought there'd be more stuff to talk about.
That's See, really cool. I actually had this tape in my house that I found.
Yeah.
I can't believe I had this, but it was I keep all my tapes down in the storage unit.
Yeah.
And then I have like a handful that I have just upstairs in my closet. And for whatever reason, I had a VHS tape that just on the side said 97 Slammy Awards. And sure as shit, it was on there. Hmm. I hadn't taped over it. I don't know why I taped this to begin with, but this was why, 13 years later, a podcast about it. So I got to enjoy watching this because it was on TSN in 97 with the TSN like commercials and stuff. And I didn't really watch most of it, but it was amazing watching the level of production at TSN, which is like the sports leader in Canada. And this was 13 years after it had launched.
Mm-hmm.
And you watch it, and it was like, it was unbelievable. Just the progression TSN has made in 13 years since that time.
I think, I guess maybe it's just a symptom of growing up as well. But it seemed to me that during a couple of years there, technology in terms of graphics, in terms of production value for Canadian TV especially, really caught up to the Americans. I don't know if you'd be able to relate or if any of our outside listeners would be able to relate to this, but I really noticed around maybe like the 2000s or like the year 2000 or the late 90s is when everybody started adopting really fancy graphics and production.
Well, that was also around the time that ESPN bought a small percentage of TSN, and that forced them to change from Sports Desk to Sports Center and incorporate the Sports Center graphics. Mm-hmm. And I think the trickle down effect that the whole network was felt at that point.
But I'm even thinking about a channel like Much Music, or Much Music for the longest time in the late 90s, they were just like really shitty looking opening packages and shitty looking intro videos. And then for a couple of years there, they just switched to super slick, you know, fancy computer-generated graphics that they still use today, and it's... why are we talking about this?
Because people are interested in
they
this
don't
about
give a
graphics.
About
okay,
Canadian
well, we'll move on in 1 second, because I want to make a point. Was that earlier this week, Ariel Helwani had posted all of his video interviews he did prior to WEC 53 in Arizona, and he was writing on Twitter how he was basically just saying that, you know, they were shot very poorly. He's very embarrassed over them.
Oh, he said that?
He said this on Twitter.
Really? Okay.
Yeah, he was very embarrassed over it. And I went and watched it, and yeah, they were not the usual standard that Ariel's interviews are. And it was, I believe he was using another cameraman that he doesn't regularly use. And I'm watching these interviews, and it's like, the content is still there.
Mm-hmm.
And I was discussing this with you, and I actually messaged Ariel. And I was like, Ariel, it sucks whatever happened, but you know, to me, it's like, content is, to me, the bottom line for me is that the content is there.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not someone, like, I will appreciate the fuck out of watching, you know, 24/7 or something that's beautifully shot. But to me, that's not the be-all, end-all to me. To me, it's as long as the content is there, I will sacrifice other, you know, the pretty bows and bells and whistles that are attached to a production.
Mm-hmm.
And Ariel replied to me. He's like, thanks for that, but I disagree. It takes the videos down a lot. And it's just interesting that I think sometimes, especially working in the television industry, you tend to overthink the viewer too much. I think at the end of the day, you're tuning in not so much for all these add-ons or necessarily condemning them over that. I don't think it really registers with the average person. They just want to know, they want to hear from these people. If it's a one-on-one interview, they care about the subject and not everything surrounding it.
I agree with you. I could see where Ariel's coming from too, because there is a difference between internet and TV.
Mm-hmm.
With TV, there's a certain standard of production that I don't know. I think people just become familiar with. Whereas the internet, everything is so easily done by anybody. Like some my mom can put on a podcast, and so your expectations for production value are way down. So I don't mind watching a shitty, poorly lit video on YouTube as long as the information is good. I really don't mind. However, if I were to see it on the 6 o'clock news, or if I were to see a badly shot interview on 2020, I would criticize it just because maybe I'm not used to it. But for the internet, I don't mind, like, this podcast, you know? Like, it helps to have nice levels, but even other podcasts that I listen to that don't have professional-sounding mics, don't have a nicely, you know, soundproof booth, I don't care. I could care less as long as it's two people talking about something interesting that I can hear. I haven't seen those videos that Ariel posted up. Were they, like, that distracting?
I didn't find them distracting. That being said, whenever I listen to those interviews, that's what I'm doing. I'm listening to them. More often than not, I will actually download them, like the audio, onto my iPod and just put them back to back and just listen to them. I'm not really watching them.
Yeah.
I don't really find a need to have to watch it. I much prefer listening to things. I listen to lots of podcasts, but watch very little. So, I mean, I watched them, and it was like they were out from like – it's just the cameraman, I think, just didn't understand how Ariel has his videos. Like, you had an extremely wide shot, and then these awkward zooms in on the subject, and it was just, I could see people being distracted by these awkward zooms and everything like that. But, I mean, the quality was fine. The questions were the same. It's still Ariel Helwani chatting with fighters, which, that to me is the draw.
Yeah. Ariel is not known for high production value. His interviews are not known for high production value. They're known for being great interviews. They're known for being great questions and rapport with fighters. And I haven't seen them again, but I don't think it would be that distracting.
So, moving on. This all started because I had watched some of the TSN commercials and stuff. And one of the main things is that after the Slammy Awards, I had an edition of Sports Desk on after that. And that used to be my favorite sports show. Mm-hmm. That and Off the Record at that
same
time.
It was the only
period.
Sports show.
Sportsnet was around at that point. They launched in 97. So, no, it wouldn't have been really around at that point. But nonetheless, those two shows, those are two of my favorite shows, period. I love those shows. Mm-hmm. And you look at the quality, especially watching through 2010 eyes. I mean, terrible.
Yeah.
But at that time, that did not matter to me at all. That wasn't... that was just what I accepted. And yeah, I think watching now, it would be somewhat difficult. But I also find like watching something like, especially ESPN programming, where it is so production heavy, I find it too much.
Yeah.
I find it's too much like
absolutely.
Pomp and circumstance. Yep. It's like the Daily Show makes fun of that with their openings and stuff. That it's this grandiose presentation. And it's like, dude, it's sports scores.
I completely agree with you. And that's the other end of the spectrum when things get overproduced. And you definitely take
away... The content
away,
is lost giant mess.
And you definitely take away from like the purity of the situation. And like I know you know working here, like we'll just say it, like we have had complaints about some of our limitations in trying to condense all the stuff that we do into nice little 2-minute video packages that, you know, don't maybe say as much as you'd want.
Mm-hmm.
And but that's one of the advantages of the internet, where you might lose some production value, but in terms of freedom, you'll get a ton of that.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
So now we get into, that was our media lesson, everybody, from John and Waiting.
Yeah.
Into the Slammy Awards, which were presented to you by the WWF and the USA Network. Some key sponsors they got for this, the broadcaster and the host. And speaking of your host, it was Todd Pettengill, who comes out to start this show. This is right around, I think this was his final year with the company, thank God. He was there years, like 5 years of this guy.
Wow.
Just one of the worst.
They got rid of him.
Personalities.
They got rid of him and they replaced him with somebody that looks just like him, in Michael Cole.
Yes.
Because could you imagine if Todd and Pettengill had stuck around into the Attitude Era? He could have he could have done a full blown heel turn. Much like Michael
I don't know.
Cole.
I don't think he had it in him.
Heel Todd Pettengill.
I don't know. For people who shit on Michael Cole, Todd Pettengill was so much worse.
He's just another generic.
He was so goofy and not funny at all.
But, you know, like, even throughout this episode, I think there were moments of wit that I could see within him.
Really?
Which would lead me to believe that he might be able to pull off
a
successful
heel turn. Okay, I want you to point them out, because I missed them. Such as his opening song, which included lyrics like, "Vince has nuts, Ted Turner doesn't."
Oh, shit. All this stuff was edited from my show.
Really?
I watched this online. So maybe that's where the difference was, because you got the full 2 hour version.
Oh, yeah, I got it how it brought
my
it.
My version was like an hour and a half.
I think mine was a full 2 hours.
And, like, my version had, like, a bunch of these, a bunch of cross dissolves throughout it that I thought they only
okay,
did
this is
going to
be fun, because there was a lot of weird shit on this show that I would have edited out if I was the WWF.
Okay.
He then says that there's no old guys here tonight. There were tons of digs at WCW on this show because WWF was getting their ass kicked at this point. As he's talking about how young and hip the WWF is, it's like, I'm listening to the cheesiest song here where it's all riffs on like old television shows, none of which air anymore, like the Brady Bunch and Cheers. He sings about asking Shawn Michaels to moon everybody. Then he asks Sonny if the left one is bigger than the right. He's got an earpiece here, and I'm just wondering if someone's like feeding him
these
lyrics.
Is this all a song?
This is all a song.
These are lyrics.
Yes, okay. And I will. We probably started the show off with this song. Then he finishes off with Hunter and China, and this was when Hunter was still the Greenwich snob, and China was the bulky bodybuilder, and he rhymes. When Hunter and China get silly, who gets the willy?
Huh.
Terrible. Vince McMahon and Jerry Lawler are your hosts at an announce table. This is like in some like wedding reception hall that they broadcast this from.
Yeah.
They talk about how great their award show is because the winners will thank themselves and no one else.
Mm-hmm.
McMahon says regular award shows are boring.
But this will... you look, why the pause there, Tom? Are you saying... That's ironic?
No, not at all. Okay. It just leads in well to the first presentation.
All right.
So Ahmed Johnson comes out first to present the new Sensation of the Year award.
Presented by Super Soaker.
Okay, good. I didn't note all these, but every award was brought to you by somebody.
Yeah.
Ahmed Johnson is out. He says he won't read a script like puppets in the other company. I believe that's what he said because Ahmed Johnson was barely coherent here.
Yeah.
Like, you couldn't understand a word this guy said.
Yes.
And that was his claim to fame, was incoherent promos.
Mm-hmm.
And your nominees are...
Hold on a second. Before that, after he says that little dig at WCW, he also says that it's very important for people to win this award as voted by the fans because fan support is very important, which he... got to know when he was rehabbing his injury. And then he says, all you fans should help Shawn Michaels, should give Shawn Michaels all the support he needs right now because he is rehabbing his injury. And this was the day before WrestleMania 13, where Shawn Michaels was champion but claimed an injury because some knee injury taking him off of the show. The story was Michaels was supposed to drop the title back to Bret at WrestleMania 13, but then he claimed this injury.
Knee injury.
And it seemed, I don't know if this was the case, but it seemed to me like Ahmed Johnson here was throwing some sort of jab at Shawn Michaels in the audience because the camera cut to Michaels right after, and Michaels just looked like shocked that Ahmed said this, and also like Michaels was just kind of like laughing it off like, oh, this guy's teasing me.
Shawn Michaels was a babyface, but by the end of the show was like the most hated person in the world.
Yeah.
It just came across like the whole locker room hates this fucker,
which
was true. I missed that line that Ahmed used, but yeah, that was the story that Michaels had this bullshit knee injury, which just happened to occur after he found out he'd be putting over Brad at WrestleMania, changed the lineup around, and then he came back after Mania, where he got into the ring, and the first thing he did was a moonsault off the top rope onto his bad knee.
Wow.
Your nominees for New Sensation of the Year were Steve Austin, Mark Merrow, Flash Funk, Mankind, those four, all these new sensations that were signed
from
WCW, and Rocky Maivia,
gotcha.
Who had just debuted. And Rocky Maivia was announced as the winner. And Lawler says that he's going to have to translate what Ahmed just said. After Ahmed says the winner is, this was so poorly delivered. He's like, the winner is Stone Cold. Everyone went to clap. Not, I don't think so. Rocky Maivia. Horribly delivered line by Ahmed Johnson.
He looks like this. He's so cute. He looked so goofy. Like just like a big doofus in a big white shirt.
Yep. These were, this was 3 years before he would debut in WCW as Big T.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Rocky thanks God for talent and wisdom. His mom, Then he says he was at home watching the Slammies last year, and now he's here winning an award. And Vince calls him a classy young man. The Rock, this man was not at this point in time.
Just the most vanilla, goody-goody award speech that...
Everything that Lawler and McMahon said off the top was not part of the Slammies.
But the crowd was booing him at this point. It was almost like the type of... Then like, he goes on to dedicate the award to his dad, which is nice and all, but... Given the reaction that he was already receiving for being such a goody two-shoes, it was like they were trying to elicit boos for how lame he was.
Pettengill then comes in and says Austin came in second place. Austin then gets up and comes to the front to cut a promo on Rocky for his high phone bill for calling in to vote for himself.
Yes, tons of cheers. Tons of cheers for the heel here, Steve Austin.
Tells Brett he hasn't had a good night's sleep since Survivor Series last year. And then he cuts a promo on Ken Shamrock and all of his friends in the UFC. I enjoyed this promo a lot from
Excellent.
Austin.
Yep.
Just not like your Austin of 98 or 99. This was just a pissed off character who just played it so well.
Yeah.
Every time they cut to him during the award show, he just looked so angry.
Yeah.
It was great, I thought.
He was great.
They announced that tonight they will be handing out a Miss Slammy Award. And the contestants are Sable, Sonny, Terry, the Funkettes, who apparently constitute one person, and China. And you could spend 99 cents to vote for who would be Miss Slammy.
Yes, you can.
Next up was the Dress to Kill Award, Way. And it was presented by Honky Tonk Man and Cindy Margolis. And Honky Tonk Man comes out and he can't pronounce her name, calling her Candy Margillis and Cindy Margufis. And says her career will plummet if she continues to hang out with that Chia Pet head Rocky Maivia. And then she insults him about having wet head. And then they go into the nominees for Dress to Kill.
Do you remember Cindy Margolis?
Barely.
This woman, her claim to fame was that she was the most downloaded woman on the internet. How do you measure that? How do you measure something like this?
You go to every single site that has pictures of her and you find out their back-end tracking numbers.
I just found it so amazing that she, this nobody, got that award. I mean, wouldn't
Well, look at some of the presenters they got here, like fucking
man-cows. No. I mean, most downloaded woman. Like, wouldn't someone like Pamela Anderson, somebody famous, be downloaded more often?
You would think so. But then again, it was probably just some bullshit title she had. As they announced the nominees, they had like this early 90s dance tune for the background for all the nominees. And it was like something out of like Reel to Reel or something. It was very dance mix-ish.
Uh-huh.
So your nominees are shot.
But think about what was on the radio during 1997. I think the world was way past these
dance hits.
Like everybody dance now.
Yeah. It was way past. That was like 92 through 95 at the latest. 96. It was all grunge at this point. Grunge and rock. Uh-huh.
I think grunge was over at this time.
Yeah, this was like 97 at it, like its peak. Your nominees are Shawn Michaels, Sable, Marlena, Flash Funk, and The Undertaker. And the winner was Sable. Way. Sable Lesnar.
Hey, during these video packages, did you notice they had Cornette and JR
deliver
like, one-liners?
Yeah, throughout. Like they got into a studio one day and voiced all of these.
Yeah.
I totally noted
like
that.
Like Cornette. Look
at that dress.
Yeah,
lame.
Is that outfit custom tailored or custom painted? Like lines that you would never ever hear during a regular
And there's
broadcast.
No way someone went back to check all of their B-roll for that
not.
Line.
No,
like, these were clearly done.
But they're very funny.
Yes, I totally noted that they could not possibly have been actual clips.
Flash got the cast of Good Times to donate their wardrobe.
Jesus.
JR.
It sounded like a video game, like where they'd come up with these lines that would be
exactly.
just interspersed within a video game. Sable brings Mark Merrow with him, who is with a cane, to accept the award.
And by the way, it was so weird having The Undertaker here as the last nominee for Best Dressed.
Dressed to Kill.
Get dressed it? To Kill, okay, whatever. But do you think of Undertaker as fashionable?
Well, yeah, it's a one color ensemble.
But you have Flash Funk. Marlena, Sable,
and The Undertaker. Merrow says that whether she is dressed or not, she is a killer. Then Sable says, I thought you weren't looking. And Merrow replies, I lied. So Mark peeps on his wife in hotel rooms.
Yep.
And Sable says that Mark means everything to her and her designer, Sandra Gray. And then says 97 will be the year of the cat.
Yes, sir.
Okay. Nation of Domination shows up at the award show. Then we get the introduction of George and Adam, the superfans. And some of you might recognize Adam from the Stand Up for WWE videos.
Mm-hmm.
He's the guy that met his wife, who he showed on a cell phone to everybody in that video. Yeah. And he's also the editor that Shawn Michaels referenced in his retirement speech this year.
Oh, really?
Who cut all those videos.
He cuts all the
red-headed kid in Stanford.
Really? He's the guy?
Yeah. That's cool. The guy who cut all Shawn Michaels' videos.
Oh, he's
videos.
Very talented.
He's a very, very good editor.
Yeah.
George.
But here, he sucked.
He was not meant for in front of the camera.
Oh, my God.
They present the Tattoo You Award, spelled T-A-T-O-O on the screen.
Yeah, they spelled tattoo wrong.
Idiots. The nominees are Drew Barrymore, who was not there, Crush, Shawn Michaels, The Undertaker, and Tommy Lee. They did this deal all night where they had these celebrity nominations. It's like, you only look more low rent by having these people that are clearly not at your event.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And you just have a still picture of them. It was very lame.
Yeah,
The Undertaker won.
And they also had this saxophone band live in attendance.
Yes.
And this band would perform these wrestlers' entrance themes live in person. And so we got to hear like saxophone renditions of the Undertaker theme song.
So weird.
It was, but I really enjoyed it. Actually, it was my favorite.
Jim Johnson
part of the show.
Was playing.
That's right.
On
he was playing
electric
bass
guitar.
Yeah. So the Undertaker, the two super fans are up there wondering where the Undertaker is because he hasn't arrived. And you can clearly see one of them, not the redhead, turn around from the camera so you can't see his pants. And then Undertaker finally shows up. The band plays his music. And then this fan looks really scared, and the camera pans down to his pants, and he's got a wet spot in his pants. So
he pissed his pants, everyone.
He peed
his pants.
This was
so lame. Like, this whole Slammy Award show, it was like a collision of, like, the early 90s campy cartoon shit and the Attitude Era.
Yeah.
And there was no middle ground here.
You're right, absolutely, because this was a time when They seemed confused about their rules for kayfabe, because there were certain parts here where guys were clearly talking about agents backstage, clearly talking about WCW, but then you had all this stupid campy shit, like this guy peeing himself. And just the thought of The Undertaker. Here you have the main event of your WrestleMania the very next day, this menacing guy from the dead coming out to receive a tattoo award, being nominated for best dressed
tattoo you,
and winning the best tattoo award. Could they not have found him for, I don't know, most devastating finisher, something like that?
Nope. Tattoo you.
Undertaker proceeds to give a speech relating how important tattoos are to his character,
and ends it with a Frank Sinatra quote that I did it my way.
It was like NXT, where like they would give a keyword to a guy and they'd have to cut a promo. And this is like The Undertaker. All right, Mark, I want you to talk about tattoos, what it means to your character.
Well, fuck, man. His keyword later would be theme music.
Yeah.
Todd Pettengill then introduces Flash Funk and the Funkettes for the beginning of our talent competition for the women for Miss Slammy. And they do this dance to Breathe by Prodigy.
Did they?
Yeah.
Seriously?
You didn't have the song?
They must have edited that out.
Yeah, they wouldn't have been allowed to put that on.
Wow.
Then they transitioned into this song that it sounded like it was snow rapping. And they try to mouth the words to the song, and they are so terribly off. It is just embarrassing. They had a close-up of the one girl trying to do the lyrics to this snow rap.
The funk kids.
She's just terrible at it. But I thought it was cool that they had Prodigy here. It was a rare time that the WWF was like, up to the times in 1997 with a relevant song.
Yeah.
That was a huge song in 97, and it just made your product come across as kind of hip.
So in the same show that they had Prodigy, they decided to use rip-off CNC Music Factory
shit. Yes, exactly,
on
yeah.
Video packages. Hilarious.
Next up was an award that was not presented this past Monday. It was the Match of the Year that Jim Ross came out to present. They cut to a shot of his wife cheering him as he came up to the stage. He takes a subtle shot at WCW, saying that WWF talent doesn't talk about what they did. They talk about what they're going to do. And they introduce the nominees for Match of the Year for 96. Your nominees are Shawn Michaels against Mankind from In Your House Mind Games, which up until that point, Foley had always stated was his favorite match. Mm-hmm. Until he
up until years later.
The Randy Orton match, yeah, in 2004. Mm-hmm. Those were the two matches he's always pointed to. Bret and Steve Austin from Survivor Series, The Undertaker and Mankind in a Boiler Room Brawl from SummerSlam, Steve Austin against Savio Vega in a Caribbean strap match at In Your House, and Shawn Michaels against Bret Hart in the Iron Man match at WrestleMania 12.
There's some all-time classics there.
There were some great matches here.
I don't remember this Caribbean strap match.
I do. It was actually a pretty good match. Yeah. If there was one, the weakest of the five would have been the Boiler Room Brawl. Michaels and Bret, Iron Man match won, and Vince states, as Michaels goes up, that if it wasn't for this untimely injury, they would be facing each other again. Michaels does his speech first, saying it takes a lot of people to have a great match, saying a great opponent, having people in the back and cameramen, and then he gets a dig in that he did win the match and then runs off. Like, just a total prick heel, but he was a babyface at this point. Hart then thanks the fans and says if Michaels miraculously finds his smile, then maybe they can have an opportunity for another match.
Unbelievable, huh?
It was just great.
On live TV, all this drama was playing out.
Totally. And then he cuts a promo on Austin, realizing that that's the guy I'm facing at WrestleMania, so I better not make the Michaels match the focus. Then we go to Doc Hendricks, who gives us like a Don West hard sell for these WrestleMania 13 hideous hockey jerseys. And they've got these models wearing them, while these two dorks are just dancing behind these models in suits.
The super fans?
No, it's not the super fans. No. It's just like regular business guys wearing suits that are dancing behind these women and like grinding into them. It was just so weird. Next up, it's the Best Hair Day Award from the Legion of Doom. And they joke about who does their hair. And Hawk says hydrochloric acid and some other joke.
Yeah, Hawk also... I would nominate these guys for worst promo of the night, but I don't know who I would pick. There would be so many. Hawk says, how about that fan of The Undertaker's? Undertaker, he really yearns for you.
That's so bad. That's so bad. The nominees are Shawn Michaels, Triple H, Steve Austin, Mankind, and Bret Hart, all accompanied by sound bites from Jim Ross and Jim Cornette about their hair. So, yeah. Clearly not part of a match.
Yeah, they said, okay, for Helmsley's, they said, Helmsley's last barber was fired for abusive hair drying. And then for Bret, they said, I think Bret's been screwed by his hairdresser, too.
Yes. Triple H wins, cuts a promo about his hair, which is right up there with Eli Cottonwood talking about mustaches. Loose Screw Award. I'm sure there was some joke in here with Sonny presenting this. Along with Captain Lou Albano. And Lou Albano just cut this weird promo where he was getting all excited and about to have a heart attack. And then Sonny had to come in to announce the nominees. Mm-hmm. And they were Psycho Sid, spelt S-Y-C-H-O, which is how they spelt it at the time. I never understood why.
Because of alliteration.
Maybe the movie Psycho wouldn't allow them to. I don't know. I'm trying to guess why you would not spell it properly. Mankind, Kramer from Seinfeld. Which is more funny after his racist incident than before.
Because he actually is. He would have won if this was in 2008 or 2007.
Steve Austin and Bob Backlund. And the winner is Mankind, who tackles the Headbangers to celebrate. Mankind comes on stage with Paul Bearer, who cuts this great promo on Sonny, stating that Sonny is the loosest screw in the WWF.
Yes.
His delivery was great.
Yeah,
good. Paul Bearer is very underrated. He has by far been the best part of that Edge-Kane feud, just with his selling. Very unfortunate that they've kind of written him off now, but even back here, just great.
He'll be back.
Mankind thanks someone who's been like a father figure to him, and that is Aldo Montoya.
Yeah.
And calls this the greatest night of his life next to his son being born, and gives a shout out to his wife who's homesick, saying, "Yo, Adrian, I did it."
Mm-hmm.
This was before Mankind had like done that Jim Ross interview, and he was still this deranged character,
mm-hmm.
and still tried to have fun with it. And it was good.
He was clearly not taking this award show too seriously, and he was having fun. And we got to see Aldo Montoya without the jock strap.
Yes, he was wearing sunglasses. Yeah. The talent competition continues. We've got Marlena, and Pettengill introduces us, saying that she's doing what she does best. And then we cut to, like, a bondage scene out of a porn film where she's blindfolded and has to identify brands of cigars. Lawler states, she really knows how to smoke a cigar. No teeth marks.
Yes.
And it ends with her. She identifies all these cigars, and then she asks for a longer cigar. And Goldust replies, that is a very special cigar. What the fuck are we reviewing?
I don't know.
This felt so creepy. Owen Hart then interrupts Todd Pettengill because he's supposed to present the next award, and he steals the Slammy that he's supposed to present. He says he has no one to thank, did it all himself, and calls himself a winner. And that Bulldog may have two titles, but he doesn't have two Slammies. Then he calls Vader and Mankind losers for not having two Slammies. Walks down, Vader in his jockstrap mask, suit, and white running shoes, and no tie. Like, just looks like a fucking blob.
This is weird to see Vader at a dining
room. This is so bad. He gets up, he gets into Owen's face, a waiter walks by with drinks, and Owen pushes the waiter into Vader, and all these drinks fall over Vader. Vader then chases after Owen, and someone's chair is stuck out, and Vader trips over the chair and lands face first on the floor. And the announcers just laugh at this guy. Vader is one of the most awkward individuals. If you remember that time, it was like a 2005 edition of Raw, where he did this comeback, and he was to do a run-in, and he slipped on his way to the ring.
Man.
He's just a clumsy individual, and this, I'm shocked that they didn't edit this part out. I guess they don't care.
He's actually a very graceful wrestler, so that, I mean, I guess that's why he's so successful. But it would suck to be him in daily life.
He just looked unbelievable here. Like, these white running shoes with your suit.
Could you imagine if, like, Vader was your dad or something? Like, just to watch this man inside his house walking up the stairs.
His son wrestles. Son's wrestled in Japan.
Well, imagine living in the same house with Vader.
Yeah.
Good.
I just keep picturing his theme song or something. Every time they go to do something, you just yell, it's time. Anyway, next talent competition. Oh, this one was great, with Sable. And this was like the opening of a porno flick.
This is the place that I come to unwind. This is the me that nobody knows. So sit back and take a walk with me on the wild side. Bruce who? And you thought I was just a pretty face. I've got one question for you. What do you think of me now?
It was like this lame voiceover by Sable, who says that this is the me that no one knows. And she's in a karate gym breaking wooden boards. And it was just random, like, sound bites from Sable, such as looking into the camera and saying, Bruce who? And she just continued to break these boards, and it sounded like the opening for Baby Blue 2. This was very weird.
Yeah.
Then we get a live performance by the Road Dogg singing his new song, Something Gone Wrong, which is probably the best appropriate title for this at this point of the show. I fast-forwarded through this song. It never ended.
I can't believe they actually tried to push this guy
as a legitimate singer.
Like, this was their idea for a babyface gimmick. We're going to push you as a real singer because we know you sound pretty good at karaoke. You're going to be a real singer. He's actually a decent karaoke level singer, I guess, but it doesn't necessarily translate to somebody I want to see win the world title.
As much as people will give, you know, their grievances to Vince Russo, I mean, he had a large part of, like, this level of talent, like the Road Dogs of the world. And you just look at where these guys were a year after this, the Road Dogg, Billy Gunn, The Rock, even. Like, you know, some credit has to be given that these characters were so dated here.
Oh, yeah.
And you just look at where a year after this, at WrestleMania 14, it was like Road Dogg and Billy Gunn as the New Age Outlaws. Like a complete new lease on their career.
Absolutely.
Amazing. Doc Hendricks then is presenting some award with a guy named John, who's wearing a, like, the new Full Metal CD album around his neck. And Doc is asking where his song Kill the Clown is on the CD. And John, with all of his charisma, says, well, we wanted to sell some units. And Doc has to sell it. This is the biggest insult he's ever heard.
Yeah.
This was so bad.
I'm just laughing because some props woman backstage had to make this necklace out of this album.
So lame.
Oh, man. Okay.
They just got anyone to present here. The award is number one with a bullet.
Okay.
And the songs are With My Baby Tonight by The Road Dogg, The Undertaker's theme music, which is how it was identified, The Nation of Domination's theme song, Flash Funk's theme song, and I Know You Want Me with Sonny in a very, very overly produced studio rendition.
Uh-huh. That's right. And who wins?
The Undertaker's theme music.
Your main eventer of WrestleMania 13.
And The Undertaker, who was just hours away from main eventing WrestleMania, discusses the philosophy and match strategy behind his theme music and ends it with, I swear to God, the words, rock in peace.
Holy shit. You have the most devastating wrestler in your company winning the girliest, goofiest awards. Best hair. He was nominated for best hair. Sorry. Best dressed. Best tattoo. Best music.
Rock in peace. Up next way is the swimsuit competition. We have Sunny come out in a purple bikini. Then China comes out, and she is not going to participate because Triple H gets on the podium. This all aired for you?
Yeah.
Wow. Triple H comes out and says he has taken her out of the competition and is not here to entertain you. Then says that Sunny has one talent and she can't show it on TV. And he has a best friend that says she isn't very good at that either.
Hmm.
This was something else that it got on TV.
Mm-hmm.
Then we've got Tracy and Nadine, the Funkettes, in white bikinis. The two women are dancing on the stage with Todd Pettengill in between them. And what does Todd yell? I feel like an Oreo cookie. Horrible.
That's not even funny.
I feel like an Oreo cookie.
Yeah, I can't believe that.
Jesus Christ.
I feel like an Oreo cookie.
Marlena is out in a gold bikini, and Vince says, it is late night, and it is the Slammies. And then Sable comes out last in a one-piece bikini, and they cut to Ken Shamrock, who looks like a 12-year-old boy seeing his first boob. Boy, was he excited here. And they show Mark Marrow putting his face into his hands, embarrassed. So that was the bikini competition way?
Yes, that's right.
And it leads to the next award, the 1-2 He's Got 'Em Award for Best Finishing Maneuver. And they have Brian Pillman come out, who cuts a promo on all of the women. Pillman mocks Ahmed Johnson and calls him an Uncle Tom. And then also insults Rocky Maivia, saying that he should have thanked the escort service for his date tonight, as they show him sitting with Cindy Margolis. And the nominees are The Sweet Chin Music by Shawn Michaels, The Wild Thing by Mark Marrow, Sid's Powerbomb, The Stunner with Steve Austin, and Bret Hart's Sharpshooter. Shawn Michaels wins. He says he had to take his jacket off because it's so hot in here, and he didn't want to offend the Hart family, and then points out that he did beat Bret Hart with that move last year.
And Vince was just on commentary, loving this.
He thought it was so funny.
Ha ha ha!
Now, I don't know if this was just some random comment he made, but I remember Bret Hart in an interview talking about he was sitting with Walter Payton, who was presenting later on in this show, and Bret said he was so embarrassed when Sable came out wearing what she did when you had a celebrity like Walter Payton in the audience and how it was so disrespectful. So he was legitimately upset
That's
about
funny
that.
Too.
Bret, not happy. Our next award way is Best Couple. And Vince McMahon and Jerry Lawler presented this. And this was a lame setup. Jerry Lawler said, I've got a lot to say here about these couples. And Vince McMahon cuts him off. And the nominees are... All right. And they are Goldust and Marlena, Bill and Hillary Clinton, Mark Merrow and Sable, Siegfried and Roy, and Triple H and China. And the winners are Goldust and Marlena. And Marlena's speech consisted of thanking Goldust for having such a big penis. The big one.
Sure.
The talent competition continued. We got a video of China lifting weights and then flicked her sweat onto a low-angle camera shot. Then the talent competition for Sunny. They played her Titantron video.
That was her
talent?
That was
it. That was her talent.
She
was
composes.
Lying in a pool.
Yeah.
Then, this was the best presentation of all of them. Bob Backlund presenting with Man Cow, the radio host from Chicago.
It's so random.
He calls Backlund a dork. Backlund then cuts a promo on him, and Mancow's buddy was with him and asked Mancow, should I put a cap in him? I don't know if Backlund was really trying to fuck with this guy or not, but this was just hilarious. These two were just trying to rail on each other.
I guess so.
And the nominees for the Larry Flint Freedom of Speech Award were Jerry Lawler, and the clip was where he calls Goldust a queer, Steve Austin, ECW's Paul E., Farouk, and Howard Stern. And Mancow then cuts a promo on why Howard Stern was nominated, calls him an idiot, and says he wants to wrestle him. And it leads to a brawl with Backlund, and the black guy with Mancow again asks if he should put a cap in him.
The mess.
Lawler is up on stage thinking he's won, but it's actually Austin who wins. He comes up, cuts a great promo where he says some people snicker when they hear about pro wrestling, but when he hears pro wrestling, he thinks about blood, sweat, and tears. And he cuts a promo on Brett for their match at WrestleMania and says it's not going to be over till Brett's at home in Calgary on the couch watching him every Monday night on Raw.
Just when you think this show couldn't get any more sillier, couldn't get any more irrelevant, Steve Austin just comes up on stage and just brings everybody back to business. Just what is this for? It's to promote your wrestling. It's to promote your pay-per-views. And he's like, enough with this bullshit. Enough
with
this man-cow bullshit. I'm just going to do my job, and you're all going to listen to me.
It was like Brett and Steve were the only guys on this show who looked at this show as a way to add interest to their match at WrestleMania and push that. And Austin was by far the MVP of the show.
So
he was great on this.
So good.
Like, I wanted to see this match again after watching this. Yeah. It was really well done what he did in this sea of shit, as Way would say. Then Austin walks off the stage, just puts the slammy on someone's table and walks away. Doink is out there and sprays, like, string shit onto Austin, and Austin just beats the fuck out of Doink. I loved Austin on this show. He was great.
He was awesome. Yes.
Walter Payton then comes out, and this was awesome. Clearly does not watch WWF programming at all. Says, there's Shawn Michaels. The last time I was here, I beat you up. And this was back when he was a guest referee for a SummerSlam match between Shawn Michaels... Sorry, between Razor Ramon and Diesel, with Shawn Michaels in Diesel's corner when he was a heel.
Hmm.
And the big spot was Walter Payton attacking Shawn Michaels. So Shawn just had this look on his face like he was not playing along here because Walter Payton just insulted him. And knowing Shawn, he probably pouted about this backstage. Walter Payton is handing out the Star of the Highest Magnitude Award, which is basically Wrestler of the Year. The nominees are Shawn Michaels, Steve Austin, The Undertaker, Sid, and Bret Hart. And the winner is Undertaker, who says he still has a higher magnitude to ascend to. So he's not only the best, has the best tattoo, the best music, but he's also of the highest magnitude.
They cut this out.
Oh,
they
what? Of all the awards, Dressed to Kill we had to make room for, and they got rid of the big award for the guys.
I don't understand.
Wow. Then Gorilla Monsoon and Sid come out to present the Lifetime Achievement Award. Monsoon does a very nice speech, introduces Arnold Skoland, who comes and accepts the award. Then the Miss Slammy Award is given out.
This Arnold Skoland video, they showed him. And in the portion where they said, Skolin now works in the front office of the WWF. They show a shot of him
going into a porta potty,
walking into a porta potty. So I guess that's his job.
I don't know.
He takes shits for a living, I guess.
Miss Slammy Award, which was presented as the big award of the night, done on fan voting, goes to Sable. They show Sonny looking pissed. Sable thanks everybody, and then the Jim Johnston band plays us out with a video recapping the night show, in case you forgot any of it. And that was the Slammy Awards way. 1997.
Mm-hmm.
In the tank. There's some interesting stuff on this show. I don't know how to really rank it amongst others. I'm going to give this a 4.2 out of 10.
I mean, it was a relatively easy watch. I'll give it that.
Did you have interest in WrestleMania after watching this? Because as you brought up, that was what this show should have been designed for.
Yeah.
That's kind of the underlying tone of the Hall of Fame every year is, yes, to honor these guys, but also push WrestleMania the next night.
That should be the underlying tone of any program that the WWF produces, is to sell your pay-per-views. But I didn't know half the matches afterwards. I knew that Brett and Austin, they mentioned Brett and Austin, they mentioned Sid and Undertaker, but
they did position the Undertaker as like the big baby face on this show.
They did
all these awards.
They did best tattoo.
Well, yeah, of course that means a lot.
I give this a 2 out of 10.
Oh,
solely for the jazz band's renditions of the wrestlers' themes.
Well, there you go. So that was the Slammy Awards, everybody, and now we will move on to your feedback that was sent in over the past week, and you can always leave feedback for us at Live Audio Wrestling's Review Away Facebook group. Just post it on the wall, and we will get your comments read here on the show every week. Start off with Nate Milton, who writes, "Loving all of the reviews, gentlemen. They are quickly replacing ESPN Radio as my entertainment on my daily commute to work. And thanks for the kind words, Brother Pollock. We may not always see eye to eye on the TNA product, but I certainly respect you and Way's opinions of the program. As far as me making sense of last week's impact, I can't. It was pretty bad, but the pay-per-view was a pleasant surprise. It was much better than it had any right to be given the build-up. Sure, there was some crap, with Shark Boy's appearance leading the way, but I enjoyed most of the matches, especially Williams versus Styles. Keep up the great work, guys." Yeah, I will completely agree with you. I thought Williams and Styles definitely had the best match on that pay-per-view, and they're going to be rematching at Genesis in January, so that should be... I mean, those two have great, great chemistry together, going way back to working together in Ring of Honor, as well as in England together. So I will completely agree with you, Nate, on that assessment. Mm-hmm.
Tim Patton, during last week's podcast, Jay mentioned how far a fall it is for wrestlers who leave the WWE. That reminded me of an event I attended at the hockey arena in Shelbourne, Nova Scotia back in 1997. The arena held at most 150 people. Imagine my surprise when they announced the main event. Chris Jericho, who at the time was either the TV champ or lightweight champ with WCW, versus Bad News Brown. I was shocked, and to this day I can't imagine how Jericho must have felt, to go from the national stage of WCW during the week to taking a weekend event in Shelbourne, Nova Scotia, then back to Nitro for Monday night. Oh, by the way, Jericho lost after Bad News hit the Ghetto Blaster at about the 10-minute mark.
Yeah, see, I imagine this would have been the Grand Prix tours that they would do in Nova Scotia in the summer and stuff like that. And Bad News Brown was actually someone who worked with Chris a lot in his early days. I'm sure Jericho had zero issue putting over Bad News Brown and getting to work with him, and not so much of a drop there. But by and large, absolutely. I think that's one thing that I'm certain adds a lot to guys with depression, is that it is such a giant fall when you go from the WWE to suddenly you're working in a mall or a high school. I mean, it is tough to move down there, not just the pay scale, but also just, man, you're working in front of 20 people when months ago you were working in front of thousands. I mean,
you're out of the public eye, your stock is dropping because you're no longer on TV. Maybe eventually you're forced to take a regular job.
And it's not like it was in the 80s and even 90s, where Japan was a big option, where there was a lot of money in Mexico, where if you left one of the major companies, there were a lot of other options for you to work at. Mm-hmm. There aren't those opportunities anymore to make a living as a professional wrestler outside of one of the major companies in North America.
Yeah.
Brian Hillhouse, Thanks for playing the NKOTBSB performance at the end of this week's review. I'm a big New Kids fan and attended all of their comeback concerts in Ontario since 2008. But I'm not a Backstreet Boys fan and have been skeptical about getting tickets to the two shows in Toronto. After hearing that nightmare of a performance and hearing BSB sing parts of New Kids songs, I know I'm not going to bother now. It would be like you guys having that John of Arc guy guest host review away. She would just destroy your awesomeness. Well, it's a he, everybody, but nonetheless.
He's my pick for guest host if there ever will be one for the law.
John from Arkansas?
John from Arkansas. That would be a tremendous
I like
episode.
John.
I like him too. I also like Chris from L.A.
Yes.
One thing, and he says, one thing I remember about the Slammies was Brian Pillman calling Ahmed Johnson an Uncle Tom. For some reason, I laughed my ass off at the fact that Ahmed wasn't black enough for Pillman. Real funny stuff. That is funny. What I really loved about that show, however, was the plethora of subtle jabs wrestlers were taking at each other. The thing I remember the most is the obnoxiousness of Shawn Michaels. Every time he accepted a Slammy, he would remind us of how he beat Bret Hart. I remember the Hitman being totally unamused by HBK, and like he wanted to murder him. I also remember Bret saying if Shawn can find a smile, he would like a rematch. Classic stuff.
We move over to Brent Chittenden. Hey guys, just thought I'd chime in with my thoughts on the latest review away. The both of you were dead on. I remember Starrcade 97 as a much better pay-per-view than it actually was. I had forgotten how pissed off I was at the end of the main event, but looking back on it, what was I expecting? Sting could still go at it. At that point, but even 13 years ago, Hogan was on his last legs as a worker. Sure, I didn't feel that it was like having sex and then having the girl shit in my mouth like that other listener, but it still sucked. The only thing that made it worse 1 year later, Sting actually joining the NWO. I think it was the Wolfpack. Really doesn't matter. Both factions were part of a terrible angle, thus flushing all that work down the drain.
Tom O'Hegan, if you guys are going to try to pretend that you are doing the show after you do the law, do not put it up right after the show is done. But it is good to have the show up so quickly so I can listen before I go to bed. Thank you. And by the way, he wrote that much less coherently than I just read it.
Wow. It's late. Jack Pisco. Great review of Starrcade 97, except I will disagree with the use of Bret Hart on this show. His character was in question since the announcement of Hart coming into WCW. The New World Order implied that he was in their camp, so when he was refereeing the Bischoff-Zabisco match, that was the hook. Will he or won't he screw over WCW? Plus, it set up the heel turns of many WCW faces to the NWO. Dusty Rhodes, Scott Steiner, Lex Luger, etc. In the following year, the overbooked nature of the last match was supposed to be WCW finally getting the upper hand after months of NWO domination. As for the title situation, they did vacate it, so Sting and Hogan could go at it again for a clean finish to their feud at a later pay-per-view.
Oh,
if you cannot see all of the negatives that you just wrote about here, first of all, Bret Hart at this point was the hottest wrestler in the industry, coming off this gigantic story in Montreal. Mm-hmm. And I don't care, a guest ref spot was not sufficient to what this guy should have been utilized for in his debut. Hold him off if that was not going to be the focus of that pay-per-view. Oh. Second, I don't see how his Bret Hart led to Dusty Rhodes, Scott Steiner, and Lex Luger joining the NWO.
Very successful heel runs, by the way, from all those guys. Dusty Rhodes, remember his heel run?
Yeah. The overbooked nature of the last match was supposed to be WCW finally getting the upper hand. They all came across like heels who were just babies after losing this clean match. That's how it came across. And for your biggest show in history, that you tune in and find out the title is vacant and we're going to decide it at another pay-per-view you can purchase for? Yeah. Fuck you, WCW. A disaster. A disaster of a show.
I think
in execution.
I have a feeling Jack wrote that just to get you riled up, John.
Well, congrats, Jack.
Sam Kennerly, Teenage Anarchist, whilst not being the best song by the band, Against Me, is definitely not Dawson's Creek shit.
If that was the song they used on the Slammies for one of the nominees, I don't know. I wasn't a fan of it. I don't tend to listen to Against Me. Ahmad Butt. Mother of God, Kaylee Mizgirl should have won Breakout Star of the Year, Diva of the Year, and Most Overperformer of the Year.
I agree. She's very good.
She was excellent on that show. I thought that the two best actresses on that show were Rey Mysterio's kid and Kaylee.
Mm-hmm.
They were
mm-hmm.
great.
But I wonder if that girl now knows that wrestling is not real.
Which one? Kaylee?
Yeah. She probably knows now. She's been instructed to give that reaction.
Probably.
We'll never see that reaction from her genuinely ever again.
You used me.
Mark Cardoso, a video game review of NES Pro Wrestling and WWF Warzone should be good.
We got a ton of feedback from people for a video game review. I think we'll definitely do that in the next few weeks. And we got just a lot of feedback. And that's definitely something I would like to do. So I'm going to try and find over the holidays my Nintendo 64 and dust it off.
You got to lend me that. You lend me the N64.
Well, you can come over. We can have a video game party,
right? All right, okay.
And we can listen to wrestling podcasts.
Yeah. We can do our own commentary.
So many options. Andrew McMahon, you guys need to get your hands on Virtual Pro Wrestling 64. If you've played the WCW NWO World Tour, it'll blow your mind. It's the same game with a shitload of more wrestlers and the ability to change their outfits. You can change your outfits in World Tour, can't you?
I didn't have an N64. Kyle Williams, again on the topic of video games, a review on WCW World Tour would be great. Might be good fit for one of the holiday weekends. What better subject to review than a video game which brought great childhood memories for the day after Christmas?
Fantastic. Mm-hmm. Donald G. Thomas. Back in the late 90s, when friends would get together to watch pay-per-views, we always started the evening with the N64 THQ wrestling game. The THQ AKI wrestling games, WCW World Tour, Revenge, then WrestleMania 2000 and No Mercy were the greatest. Play a Royal Rumble, and because the controls were pretty simple, everyone could enjoy. The best was when a player got thrown out, and then you'd return as some random wrestler. The laughs that ensued when you started as The Rock, but then returned as China, Jim Ross, a Ho, yes, the Godfather's Hoes were in there, Briscoe or Pat Patterson. Yep, the Stooges were in Mania 2000. My fave of that line was WrestleMania 2000. The WCW games didn't have a creator wrestler mode, and my No Mercy cartridge, like many others, had a defect where the memory would wipe now and then. So progress, unlock content, created wrestlers, etc. would all disappear.
Mm-hmm. Josh Thomas, hey guys, last night I couldn't get to sleep, and while flipping through the channels, I saw Dana White on The Hour. Now, he mentioned that he bought the company in 2000. Who owned the company before that while Shamrock and Severn were a part of it? Also, is it true that they do 500 million viewers?
The owner previous to Zuffa was Bob Meyerowitz and the Semaphore Entertainment Group. They sold it in early 2001 for, what was the grand total? It was something like $4.5 million, I think, something in that range. And
so that was in 2001 as well.
That was a month before WCW went out of business.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah, and ECW. A ton of stuff happened in that month.
Look at the difference.
Yes, very different landscape, boy. And I actually did see this interview, and he said that they're in 500 million homes, not that they have 500 million viewers.
Oh, okay.
Forrest Bowling. And as John fell down from that chest check, I do believe that his heart shrank two sizes too small.
Mm-hmm. Well, just going back to that, hold on a second. How much did you say it cost to buy the UFC? Like $4 million or something?
I want to say $4.5 million.
And how much did it cost to buy WCW?
$2.5 million.
So I guess for a few more million, McMahon could have bought the UFC at that time.
Yeah, totally could have bought UFC at the time. In fact, I believe they did talk with the WWF at one point about buying it with Shane McMahon involved.
So they could have bought one or the other.
In fact, Zuffa was considering selling it to Shane at one point before the big explosion in 2005.
And now what's the higher commodity?
Now it's worth over $1 billion.
There we go. Amazing. Richard Lee. Hey guys, great job on the Starrcade 97 show. This was at a point when I had not watched wrestling for a while, college being a priority at the time, but I watched this online, and really, you should have given the show at least a 1 or 2 for the Guerrero and Malenko match, because the rest of the show from that point on started to get bad, i.e. your Halloween Havoc 99 review, which was so, so worse.
All right.
Shows. The rest of the shows from that point, he means.
I just thought, as bad as that Sting and Hogan laying down for each other match and the fuck up with the main event for Halloween Havoc 99, which was a very bad show as well. I just thought Starrcade, that was their biggest show in history. And that to me had much more damaging effects on the product than Halloween Havoc 99, which was, I mean, the company was already having its problems at that point. They were still salvageable, but Starrcade 97, to me, that was the peak point for WCW. And a lot of what happened on that show, I think, hurt a lot of people's interest in that 18-month buildup. Mm. We go to Brandon and Finger. Please, God, review Starrcade 2000. I'm watching it now at WWE Classics, and it's literally perfect material for you guys. Mean Gene just asked Major Guns to fly from his pole. Botched promos, crazy matches, unprotected chair shots, triple swerves. It has everything. And the last one, here, you can read away, sure. From Jay Hunter.
Hey, John and Way, with regards to Nick Patrick selling Bret Hart's punch at Starrcade 97, whole way is a Geordie term of encouragement, seen when Newcastle United score, fans and footballers raise both hands and cheer. I've uploaded the clip onto the Facebook group. Now Nick Patrick's jumping salmon bump makes much more sense, right? Whole way, the lads. The 97 Slammies were a tough slog. Afterwards, I was in no mood to watch the 2010 Slammies. Anyway, why were WWF taking the piss out of their own fans with those two plants pretending to be overjoyed marks? It was excruciating. It was fun hearing a band doing renditions of the wrestlers' themes. Owen's segment was the highlight of the show. His promo, the scripted waiter bump, and Vader tripping up was hilarious. You could tell Undertaker didn't prepare anything for his speeches and hated doing it. Hang on, he had an empty seat waiting for him after his speech. So was Taker in the toilet when they announced he won? One more thing. Why was that clown Doink getting so much airtime? All in all, I like the idea of the Slammies. Having one kayfabe award show and a serious one, the Hall of Fame. I don't like it as a 3-hour Raw, though, because it's far too long, but conversely, the matches are too short and mean nothing. That's something I noticed. The matches on Raw this week were incredibly short. They
always do on the 3-hour shows. When they have the time, they book so much on it that the extra hour is almost like, what are you doing it for when you're rushing through so much more? It's like they write double the amount for just an hour extra.
Yeah.
Anyway. So there, that wraps up Review Away for this week, everybody. Lots of stuff to chat about. Now, first of all, Way, we wanted to chat about an initiative we're trying to instill in the listeners. Now, everyone knows, and they posted it on the Facebook group this week, the Wrestling Radio Awards that are going on right now, which you can go check out at WrestlingRadioAwards.com. Now, we don't really care who you vote for like shows and hosts. By all means, vote however you'd like. But there is one category at the bottom to have an award created for next year. And we feel, Way, that the Scott Putsky Award has become such a big hit on this show that it should be a yearly award given out. And it's the best way to honor Scott Putsky.
An officially recognized award? You want the Scott Putsky Award to get some actual
legitimacy?
I want
everyone to go to WrestlingRadioAwards.com, vote if you'd like, or you can just skip them and just put in Scott Putsky Award to be included for 2011 for the Wrestling Radio Awards.
Scott Putsky, I don't know.
This, more than anything, me and Way just want to see if enough of you will vote for this that they actually acknowledge it.
Yeah.
Which would be very fun our part. So we're going to send you guys over there, and it's a very cool concept where these guys try to go through everything that all of these radio shows put out every year. Not a very easy job. So
Scott Putsky, everybody. Scott Putsky for 2010.
There you go. And quick, some updates for our shows that are coming up in the next bit. Of course, we are going to be back on Tuesday with Review a Raw. And then after this Tuesday show, we're going to take a bit of a hiatus because it is the holidays, everybody, and me and Wade do need some time to not watch wrestling. I think it's very important to recharge our batteries. So we are going to be, of course, doing live audio wrestling next Sunday night on Boxing Day evening. And we're going to be joined by Ariel Helwani from MMAfighting.com, the MMA Reporter of the Year, joining myself and Way. He's going to join us live that night, as well as Dave Meltzer and some other fun.
It's an all-star cast.
Yes, it is. But we're not going to have Review and Impact on Christmas Eve, nor are we going to have the following week's Review a Raw or Review and Impact. So it's going to be three shows we're going to miss. We will still have a Review Away each week. We won't miss any shows there. And that's pretty much the update.
Yeah, we'll chat all about Impact on the 26th when John and I host it. And we'll hear, hopefully, from all of you. So please give us your thoughts on Impact and give us your thoughts on the wrestling world at large.
Yes, we want you guys to still keep yourselves entertained, update where you'd like. But after Review of Raw this week, we will be returning on January the 4th on the Tuesday, and then we'll be back to our regular schedule.
But as always, John and I will still be active on the Facebook group. So
yes.
If you really care what we think.
Yes. Christmas morning, we'll be on the Facebook wall.
Yeah.
For sure. So for next week, everybody, the final review away it's technically the final show of the decade because the new decade doesn't start until 2011.
All right.
We've just kind of been living in this.
This is the last review away of the decade.
So originally, I want to go back and review another Starcade because at first I wanted to try and get through a few of them, but it's just not don't have the time. Nor, as I look back at some of these shows, do I really want to sit through. And I know one of our listeners suggested Starcade 2000. That was like the final couple of months of the company where it was an incredibly depressing product, and I want to be happy during the holidays. Not that this other show is much better, but I thought we'd go back to a year earlier when Russo and Ferraro were still booking this shit.
Right on.
To Starcade 1999, and it was headlined by Bret Hart against Bill Goldberg, and we'll find out how well this show did. So next week, we will our final review of the decade way will be Starcade 1999, and we'll see just how far the company had fallen in 2 short years since that Sting Hogan peak. And can I assume you have not thought of a song to close us out with?
You would have assumed wrong, because I have. And I would like to hear the complete version of Road Dogg Jesse James's hit. What's it called?
Something Gone Wrong.
That's it.
Here you go, everyone. The Road Dogg to close us out.
Double J Jesse James.
Welcome to the Slammy. Something Gone Wrong. Make reference to the Slammy. I think let him sing, something gone wrong.
The longing I see in your eyes, a distant longing caught me by surprise. You're laying next to me, but I can see that you're not really there. And I wonder now just where you go. How'd you leave? And you're ever coming home? Baby, something's going wrong around this place. Oh, no, sit down, it's not dark and fair to bear. Don't say never, and don't you ever go away. Your love away. Are there words you need to hear Jesse say? Is this something I can fight, or am I just too late? And I wonder now just where you go. Why'd you leave? And are you ever coming home? It's not a talking best affair. Don't say never, and don't you ever go away. Baby, don't you go away. I said, don't you go away. Don't you go, don't you go. Don't you ever go away. Oh, don't you ever go, you go away. And I wonder now, where did Sean go? Where'd you go? And where you ever coming home? Baby, something's going wrong around this place. Time to sit down and start your talking face to face. Don't you ever go away.
Don't say never. I'll never say never. Go away.
Ladies and gentlemen, give it up, Jesse J.
Awesome.
Okay, he'll sing a little bit, but can he wrestle?